A couple was visiting another couple for a meal, and the host, husband, just seemed to be all over his wife. It seemed like there was nothing she could do that was right. And at one moment, when she was out in the kitchen, the guest husband said, "Bill, you ought not to run over Ruth like that." He said, "Aw, you can't run over that woman. All you can do is run up against her." Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that in this psalm, the writer has found out something. He's found out you can't get away from God and what he decides to do about that. God knows us. He knows what we're doing. He knows where we're going. He knows when we sit down. He knows when we rise up. He knows everything we're doing. Now, it's fascinating that we think we can hide from him. Remember Adam and Eve? "Get out of there, Eve. That's my bush." Or the little child with her head under the pillow. "You can't see me. I'm hiding." God knows everything we're doing. But more than that, he knows everything we're thinking. He knows what's going on in our heads. Now, sometimes we try to hide what we're thinking behind the mask of our faces. I'm cursed with a very mobile face. And sometimes when I'm going to be on a platform, Karen will say to me, "Watch your face." But we think we can hide. We think we can hide what we're thinking behind that mask. No, God knows it. But it's worse than that. He knows what we're thinking before we think it. He knows what's down in that swamp of the unconscious. Are you ever embarrassed by your dreams? I am. I think when I wake up, "Where'd that come from?" And I know all too well where it came from. When our first child was going to be born, Karen asked whether I could be in the delivery room with her. And the delivery room nurses said, "Oh, no, no. No, no, you don't want to be there." At that point, they were using the drug scopolamine. And they said, "Oh, you've never heard curses like come out of the mouth of a woman who's giving birth. Filth. Filth coming out." He knows the deepest, darkest parts of us that we would love to hide from ourselves as well as anybody else. He's with us. And you can't get away from him. Now, in our English Bibles, it says, "It's too wonderful for me." Well, in English, wonderful is always positive. But the Hebrew word goes both directions. And something that's too wonderful can be too much. And that's what's going on here. "That's too much for me, God. Back off. Give me a little room here. It's my life, after all. Stop messing around in here." So where am I going to go to get away from him? Years ago, I was on a plane, I think it was in Milwaukee, and we had a little time and a layover, but not enough time to go into the terminal and come back out. So I was sitting there waiting and reached into my pocket for my testament. And as I did so, I thought, "Now wait a minute. What does some camel driver 2,000 years ago know about hurtling down a 2-mile strip of concrete in an aluminum cigar tube, about to shoot into the air at hundreds of miles an hour?" I don't know whether I turned to it or whether I thought it, but the words came, "Yea, though I take the wings of the morning and fly to the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand will lead me." And I thought, well, that camel driver may not have known about Boeing, but he knew about the God who made Boeing. So, where am I going to go? Well, let's try heaven. For a lot of people, religion is a way to escape God. It's a way to give God a nickel and keep him at arm's length. But it doesn't work. Nelson Blount was a roustabout working in the cranberry bogs of Rhode Island, and with one thing and another, he rose to own Ocean Spray cranberries. He and his wife moved to Barrington, Rhode Island, a posh suburb of Providence, and began to climb the heap. They joined the church, and they climbed. And Blount said, when we got to the top, we discovered that the heap we'd been climbing was a manure heap. Now, you can't escape God in your religion. Well, all right, let's go to hell then. We'll escape him there. Parents sent a young man to what was then Asbury College to reform him. He didn't agree with that program. So he began to look for the fastest girl on campus, found her. They met at a motel in Lexington for a night of stolen pleasure. Some weeks later, the young man was talking to a pastor, and he said, I don't understand it. It was the most miserable night of our lives. It was sordid. It was wretched. The pastor smiled and said, you know why? You thought there were two people in the room. There were three. Jesus was there too. No, you can't escape him in hell. Well, I'll escape him in the darkness then. I'll go off into the dark. He's light. I'll get away from him in the darkness. No, you won't. Even the dark is light to him. There was a young man in seminary. They called him Spacey. He had done drugs so much and so long that every so often he would have a recurrence and just sort of space out. He told of a weekend when he'd spent every dime he had and bought every kind of drug he could find, and he was going to trip out. The first drug was the psychedelic LSD. And he said, almost as soon as I dropped it, I knew it was going to be a bad trip. In his trance, he was in a dark room, but he himself had been turned inside out. He said, my insides were on the outside, and they were glowing in these horrid colors. And he said, in the trance, I heard steps outside that room, and I knew it was Jesus. And in the darkness, with the glowing ugliness, I said, no, Jesus, no, Jesus, don't come in here. Don't see me like this. But he said, I knew the moment his hand touched the doorknob because I saw the doorknob begin to glow. And I watched in horror as the doorknob slowly turned. And suddenly, the room of my trance was flooded with light. And Jesus was there. And he said, in a moment, I was stone cold sober. He said, I went and flushed $250 worth of drugs down the drain. The fish must have had a real trip. But Jesus had brought the light into my darkness. No, you can't escape him. He knows you. He's with you. You can't get away from him. By what right does he do that? By what right does he mess around with our lives? By what right does he poke around? The right of the Maker? Who made you anyway? Are you responsible for yourself? Did you choose to be? Did you choose your personality? He knitted you together in his mother's womb. Karen thinks that makes knitting a divine activity. I'm not sure about that, but he's the author. He's the one that is telling your story. And characters only exist in the imagination of the author. If the author should ever stop thinking of them, they would not exist anymore. And suddenly, our author says, wait a minute. If you stopped thinking about me, I wouldn't exist. Don't stop thinking about me. And that wonderful line, when I awake, I am with you. You're here. And because you're here, I'm here. Without you, I wouldn't be here. Oh God, oh God, don't stop thinking about me. But then look what happens. God, did you know there are people who don't like you? It's like the pugnacious little boy. A new kid moves to town, and all the other guys are picking on him. And then this guy discovers that the new kid's dad runs the candy store. You know what? You and I, we got to stick together. You know what those guys are saying about you? You know what? We got to go beat them up. God, I hate those who hate you. I hate them with a perfect hatred. That's not Christian perfection, by the way. That's not all bad. Some of us are so apathetic about evil. It's just murder. It's just prostitution. It's just drunkenness. It's just gambling. People do it. And there's something in the heart of God that says, I wish you looked at evil like I look at evil. I wish you understood what evil does to people. I wish you understood what evil is doing to my world. I wish you hated it like I hate it. Why don't we hate it? Perhaps because we're trying to live as far from our author as we can. But of course, there's a downside to all that. I not only hate evil, I hate evil people. I want to get rid of evil people. And there come the religious wars, the slaughters, the hatreds. What prevents that here? Oh God, I wish you'd kill the wicked. Wait a minute. Maybe before you do that, we ought to check out me. Yes. The very same words that the psalm began with. You've searched me and known me. Search me and know me. Oh God, is that stuff that I hate in me? We men don't like to go to the doctor. We're afraid he'll tell us something we don't want to know about. But if we've got our head screwed on right, year by year, we'll go to the doctor and get a physical. Hey, doc, look, anything here that's going to cause trouble? What the Bible is talking about is a spiritual. God, search me and know me. Try me. Now, that's not try me out. That's the technical word. How does an assessor decide whether a lump of rock is gold or not? He tries it. He puts it in the crucible and turns up the heat. And if the rock could cry, it would. No, no, It's too hot. It hurts. Turn it down. Turn it down. Try me, God. Do you dare to pray that prayer? Do I? Do whatever you need to do, God, to find out who I really am. Know my thoughts. The idea is, know my anxious thoughts. Do you know where sin comes from? Fear. We're afraid we won't get what we want. We're afraid we won't get what we need. We're afraid somebody else will get what we want, what we ought to have. It was fear that drove Adam and Eve to do what they did in the garden. The fear that God was not on their side. He wasn't going to give them the wisdom they needed. Someone said, worry is the belief that there's something Satan can do to you that God can't prevent. What I'm saying to you today is, this guy says, Lord, let's don't just talk about my sins. Let's talk about those worries, those anxieties, those fears that can take control of me and lead to that. See if there be some literally offensive way in me. God, am I walking on some path that's going to lead to turning my back on you? Some path that's going to lead to my abusing my children? That's going to lead to abusing the trust that is reposed in me? Search me and know me. Because of my fair skin, and all those years that I spent in the hay fields with no shirt on, I'm prone to skin cancer. So every year I go to the dermatologist. And she pokes and prods and looks around and, oh, okay, yeah. There's a precancerous spot here. Can I take the nitrogen bottle and kill it? Well, no, doc. I mean, it's a cell like every other cell, and cells have a right to live, and we got to... No. Kill it, Doc. Kill it. Search me and know me. I hate evil, God. And most of all, in myself. See my anxieties. Try me. Let's get rid of that way that leads to offense and lead me on the way everlasting. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's really what this is all about. Time after time we come and say, search me, O God, and know me. In a moment, we will speak words of confession. Thank God. Thank God for forgiveness. But He won't forgive what we haven't recognized. Search me and know me. Try me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there be any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Let's pray. Too often, O God, we run from you, our spiritual doctor, because we like our offensive ways. We like our anxieties. Have mercy upon us, O Lord. Today we say, search me and know me. You are with us. You do know us. We cannot escape you because you made us. And as our Maker, we ask you, search us and know us. In your name, amen.